Saturday, the 4th of July, then 82 on Sunday. Next chance of rain, not till Monday. Right now, sunshine, 58 degrees, Racine and Kenosha, 55 for Burlington, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg up next. Support for the WGTD Morning Show comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, Kenosha, online at andreasgifts.com. WGTD is also supported by Carthage College, dedicated to combining an environment of reflection and self-discovery with a culture of high expectation, designed to allow students to uncover and ignite their potential. More information about undergraduate and adult education opportunities online at carthage.edu.
Sometimes the best ideas are the simplest ideas, and I think that is the case in something called the Strangers Project. It was an idea hatched by a young man named Brandon Doman, in which he essentially wrote a sign and asked complete strangers passing by, whoever was interested, to stop, take a moment, and write down on a plain piece of paper whatever personal story they felt like sharing anonymously. 10,000 stories later, the Strangers Project is still going strong. And its essence is captured in a new hardbound book from HarperCollins called What's Your Story? True Experiences from Complete Strangers, which gathers, I believe, 200 such stories shared anonymously from people that otherwise Brandon Doman does not know. But it is something which evidently is serving a very powerful emotional need for people to have their own stories heard. In many cases, stories which people do not feel comfortable sharing, perhaps, in any other way. And I'm really happy to have Brandon Doman on the line with me to talk about the Strangers Project and the event, circumstances under which it was created. He is also very heavily involved in a nonprofit organization called Active Minds, and works on a lot of different good causes. But today we focus primarily on the Strangers Project and this new book from HarperCollins called What's Your Story? Brandon Doman, we welcome you to the morning show.
Glad to be here. Thanks so much.
So glad to be having this opportunity. So take us back to the start of the Strangers Project. First of all, where were you and what were the circumstances under which this interesting idea first took shape?
So I started this back in 2009. I had just finished at Central Michigan University and moved to Ann Arbor for, you know, I was planning to be there for about a year after school.
What did you study at school, by the way?
I studied English and creative writing. I switched around a bit, but that's what I ended on. So there's definitely some overlap there. But I always had interest in, you know, I looked at sociology, at film, at writing, kind of all these things that later worked into the work I'm doing now.
So
I started it really just outside of a coffee shop. The first day that I started, I didn't even have a plan to do it. I had some free time that afternoon, and I was just sort of watching people pass by and being curious about those people, as I've always been. So the idea kind of popped in my head, and I just took a Sharpie and a notebook that was in my backpack at the time and just wrote a sign, just like the one I use now, but much smaller, and propped it up on the table, and it just invited people to stop and share something.
What exactly did that sign say?
So the first one just said, hi there, I'm collecting your stories, please stop and share. And I really didn't know if anybody would react to it, if they would even look at it, if they would stop. But I would say just about immediately, as soon as I put it up, I remember these two women stopped by and asked what I was doing. And I told them I'm not quite sure yet, but then invited them to write something down about their lives in my notebook. And they were pretty excited to participate. And that was kind of the start of it all.
Wow. Do you remember how many stories you ended up gathering that very first day beyond those two, from those two women?
Yeah, the first day was just about 10 stories, which at the time felt like a lot. But I went home and read them that first evening, and it was the same kind of stories that I get now, where there was a couple funny ones, there was a couple emotional ones, and that curiosity just really exploded on that first day.
Hmm. Do you recall people in those first few days asking you many questions about what is this about, or how are these going to be used, or who is going to read these, who is going to see them? Or by and large, were people even at the beginning relatively open to do this and relatively unhesitant? I guess the heart of my question is, did you end up having to offer a lot of reassurance and answer a lot of questions before at least some people would take the step to actually do this?
Yeah, I've gotten pretty much the same questions that I even get now today. My answers were a little bit more clumsy back then because I didn't have a path in mind. But I was very honest about that, and I think that's something that has resonated with followers of the project, is this project was born out of just a very honest curiosity about people. So I told people in the beginning, you know, I said I'm not exactly sure what this is going to be, but whatever you share, you know, I might share it on a website, something else, but I told them that the core aspects of it, where it's just anonymous and it should be anything about your life, I said as long as we do that, then I think it'll work out. And people were not hesitant. They were very willing.
I know that now you live in New York City, but as you just said, the project began in Ann Arbor, not quite as big a city. Nevertheless, were the people who were stopping by and writing down these stories for you, were they essentially all complete strangers to you, or were some of them people that you happened to know?
They were, at the beginning, it was all complete strangers. Over the years, I've certainly had friends, you know, add stories, and I'm not even sure which stories are theirs. But they were complete strangers. I was very fortunate to start at somewhere like Ann Arbor, where people were very receptive to it. And, you know, if I would have done it somewhere else, even on a less busy street where people wouldn't have stopped, I might have, you know, put the sign up and waited for 20 minutes and then taken it down if nobody stopped, and then never been to where we're at now.
So in the early going, were there days when, well, first of all, how persistent were you? I mean, did you go back the very next day to the very same place and put up that same sign again? I mean, help us understand sort of the growth curve of this project.
Yeah, so I had, I did it in front of the same coffee shop most of the time. It was right on State Street, North University in Ann Arbor. And getting those first stories, like I mentioned before, really kind of exploded this curiosity in me. And I was taking a little bit of time off, having just graduated. I was taking the summer to enjoy, you know, finishing up my degree. And I started going out pretty much every day, usually at least five times a week, sometimes six. And I would do it sometimes for 2 hours, sometimes for 8 hours, just depending on, you know, the weather and how long I wanted to sit out there. But the first summer was every day that I could, and I got the first probably 800 or 900 stories that first summer, and every time I went out, I just knew I had to keep finding more stories.
So were there ever days where absolutely nobody stopped, or every single day would at least one story be written?
Yeah, every day I've gone in any city, I've always gotten at least something. There were certainly some days that were slower, but I've never had a day where nobody stopped.
That says something right there, doesn't it? Did you ever have a sense that you had the same people stopping again and again? I mean, would you recognize people?
Yeah, early on. So as you mentioned, in Ann Arbor, it's a lot smaller. And so I did get some repeat people. But that was kind of really fun to sort of see these updates of lives later on. There was a moment about in the first year of the project where this woman had stopped by, or she didn't even stop at first. She walked by, and she looked a little bit distressed, and she kind of, like, did a second take to my sign, and she said, "What is this?" And I started to explain, and I got about two words in, and she just sat down and started writing, and then she got up and left. And I read her story, and it was one of, you know, it was early on, and I was just realizing that some people write some pretty emotionally heavy stuff. And she wrote that her friend had just died of a heroin overdose, and she was on her way to find heroin because she didn't know how else to cope with it. And that was a challenge to read that and to get that sort of, you know, to know that she was sitting right across from me and there was no way to get back in touch with her, to help her, to know what happened, you know, because I don't read these stories right away. I read them later. But about a year later, I befriended a barista at that same coffee shop, and she one day asked, she said, "Can I write you another story?" And I never realized she had written a story before. And we ended up talking, and she was that same girl, and she wrote about how she wanted to update her story because now she was working to go back to school, and she never ended up doing heroin that day. She found other ways to cope with it, and she was, you know, just trying to find ways to more healthily process these things in her life. So getting updates like that was a really great moment in the project, and it's happened many times since then.
Wow. So it began in Ann Arbor. Tell us about its migration.
Yeah, so in between, partway through this, I started working for a nonprofit organization called Active Minds, and they are a mental health advocacy and awareness group on college campuses all around the country. So they have students doing really great mental health work on college campuses. And I ended up running one of their tours along with a partner, and we ran their suicide awareness and prevention program. And I ended up doing 7 tours with them, so it was a great way to travel the country and also to collect stories from the Strangers Project on my own time. And in the middle of one of those, we had gone to New York for an event, and I fell in love with it. So at the end of that tour, I just sort of decided to make the move.
So how long has this project been anchored in New York City?
I'd say about 4 years now, going on 4 years in the city.
Where in general have you stationed yourself to gather these stories? And in one particular location? I mean, I know I've read about a couple of them specifically, but do you fan out all over the New York City area? Or where does this happen now?
Yeah, so the great thing about New York is there's a lot of wonderful places for me to collect. I do have some favorites. A lot of people will see me at Washington Square Park just because there's a really great mix of, you know, New Yorkers and tourists and people of all ages. It's a very lively park filled with, you know, musicians and artists and all sorts of stuff. But I like doing it all over. I do Union Square. I do a great park in Brooklyn called Prospect Park, which is just full of trees and grass everywhere, but still lots of people. So really all over the city.
You are guided by 5 principles, which you outline in the introduction to your book. Why don't you share those with our listeners?
So I think one of the biggest and most important ones is that it needs to be anonymous. That's been something since the very beginning, and I think that really helps people feel like they have a safe place to share. You know, these stories aren't all deep and emotional, but some of them are, and some of them are funny, but I think that anonymity really lets people open up there. Another huge part of it for me is that every single story is shared face-to-face. So there's no online submissions. None of these are mailed in. All of the, it's actually growing up to about 15,000 stories now because I'm still out there collecting. But every single one is just somebody sitting down wherever I'm at, you know, so we chat a little bit and then they get some paper and start writing.
So in other words, I mean, not only are they not submitted online, but also it's not just a box with a slit, like a suggestion box that people
drive.
So in a sense, it isn't anonymous to that extent. There is some kind of face-to-face encounter involved.
Yeah, so I meet every single person that shares. I don't, as I mentioned, I don't read them on the spot, and I tell them that. So they don't have to worry about, you know, handing me a sheet of paper, and I all of a sudden quickly start reading it and see what they said. They go face down into a pile of, here in New York, I'll get about 80 stories a day. So it's relatively safe there. But yes, I do meet every single person and talk to every single person.
Now, was that a really careful, conscious decision right from the start, or did it just slowly dawn on you that that would be an important element?
I didn't realize it would be as important as it became. I really enjoyed that aspect of it. You know, I was enjoying being out there and talking to people and also sort of giving people a space to participate in something like this. I did try doing online submissions for about a month or two, and they worked great. I mean, I was getting hundreds and hundreds of online submissions, but it didn't quite feel the same. So I pretty quickly decided that I would keep it all just face-to-face.
And also one of those five principles, stories must be spontaneously handwritten. What exactly are you saying there?
So part of the same reason that I got rid of the online submissions from that short little two-month experiment was I wanted people to be really present in the space. I didn't want people preparing works and, like, you know, spending a week editing something and rewriting it and crafting it and then bringing it in. I really wanted to sort of see what happens when you just take a moment to acknowledge that you're in this space and that you have something to share. And I think some of my favorite stories, you know, one of the most common things I hear, people come up and they say, oh, I'm not interesting, or I don't have something worth sharing. And those ended up being, if I can just get those people to write, those ended up being all these incredible stories that are in the book and on the website. I really found that anybody, as long as you are just honest and you, you know, put the pen to paper and just sort of say something about your life, it generally ends up being interesting for other people.
Hmm. Another principle, people can write about anything they want as long as it's true. And of course, I suppose there isn't any way to know for absolute certain that what's being written is true, but that's what you certainly hope. What about that notion of people can write about anything? Do you end up having to cajole very few people or make suggestions? Or in a sense, do you really try to leave that up to them to summon up their stories in a sense on their own?
Yeah, ideally, I love it when it's just completely up to them. I think that's when I get some of the most surprising things. You know, even after about 15,000 stories, I'm still surprised every time when I go home. Some people will need a little bit more direction just to get started. And, you know, I'll start saying it could be a memory, it could be something you've learned about life, it could be about today, it could be about your childhood. You know, if I go through a list like that, they'll usually come up with something. But I really wanted to, a big part of this for me is, you know, when you look out at a crowd of people and you just don't know what everybody's stories are. We're all going through so many different kinds of things at any given moment in our lives. And I wanted to just capture whatever was on their mind at that moment. So, you know, I didn't want to have this, like, really rigid structure of, you know, tell me the best thing that's ever happened to you or tell me the hardest thing you've ever dealt with. I wanted to see what they choose to share when given the opportunity.
We're speaking with Brandon Doman, and we are talking about something called The Strangers Project. In which the stories of, for the most part, complete strangers are gathered in very unvarnished, humble fashion. But the stories now number between 10 and 15,000 that have been gathered over the last few years. 200 of those stories have been gathered together in a new hardcover book called What's Your Story? True Experiences from Complete Strangers. Brandon, as people are doing this, are there very many instances in which people become tremendously emotional, where maybe the act of writing a story, in a sense, taps into very deep places? As we've already touched on, many of these stories are sometimes very tragic in nature or revealing maybe deep, dark, painful secrets from their past. Does this, in the moment that they're writing and in the moment that they are in your presence, does this ever become kind of an outwardly emotional encounter, and maybe one in which they want to sort of open up and share and ask questions and so on? I mean, I could imagine this scenario maybe playing out in ways that you wouldn't necessarily anticipate and maybe not also necessarily want. Does that very often happen? Or is the simple act of sharing the story for some people seemingly enough?
Yeah, people certainly have gotten emotional, you know, after writing. But I've generally seen that even if they're getting emotional about writing about something very difficult in their life, it's a good kind of emotional because they're sort of putting that energy somewhere else rather than just being a weight on them. But yeah, some people will absolutely, you know, kind of open up right on that spot outwardly and physically. And I've actually seen some really beautiful moments come out of it where complete strangers will, you know, you see all these people with clipboards and they're all writing. So everybody knows that these other people around them are participating. And especially here in New York, there will sometimes be, you know, 15 or 20 people all writing at the same time, all complete strangers, just side by side, you know, all ages, all walks of life. And I've seen these, like, little new connections and friendships form between those people where complete strangers will then end up talking to each other just because they already have this sort of shared experience. So, yeah, people definitely have reactions to it, but then I think some really wonderful things can come out of that.
As I opened up your book and started reading through these stories, one of them that really leapt out at me, kind of unexpectedly in a sense, because it's not one of the more dramatic stories in this, although it's really beautiful in its own way, starts out this way: is remembering a blessing or a curse? It's the second line that really leapt out at me. I am 61 years old. And then he goes on to say, my life hasn't been marred by major tragedies such as warfare or serious illness, but it hasn't been a comfortable experience either. It's been like taking a long walk in a pair of shoes that didn't fit. Somehow the personality and the destiny didn't align. And he goes on to say, for various reasons, my life now is more difficult than it has ever been. This somehow doesn't feel like the way it should be. Anyway, I often find my thoughts traveling back through time to the 1970s and 80s when I was in my 20s and 30s. I remember happy times with friends now dead or dispersed, and the experience of living is in a pre-technological world that was much simpler and much less uptight. I remember what my body and my face and my spirit were when I was young. Sometimes the recollections are comforting, and summoning up the long ago brings a smile. But at other times, I have to tell myself, no, no, don't go back. It hurts too much to remember better days. So is it a blessing or a curse to be able to remember? That is a really striking story. And part of what sort of grabbed my attention was just the fact that the person who wrote this is 61 years old. And as I first opened up this project and as I knew a little bit about it, I imagined this would mostly be young people with that kind of free, breezy, easy approach to life who would be inclined to sit down and actually do this. It actually never dawned on me until I came to this story that somebody 60 years old or maybe older would also take up this opportunity. I'm not sure what I had in my head that I wouldn't imagine somebody of that age being interested in doing this. Can you say a word about that, maybe about this particular story and about the range of age of people who have taken advantage of the Strangers Project?
Yeah, for sure. I've been really happy to see that people of all ages and all walks of life have been extremely willing to share their stories. I believe my oldest participant was in her mid-90s. And my youngest was, I think she was 4 or so, and she spoke while her dad wrote for her.
Oh.
But yeah, you get all ages, which I really love. And yeah, I think those are some of the ones from the older participants are really moving to see them. You know, many times they're reflecting back and sort of writing about the time when, you know, my biggest demographic is young people, but I do get the full range. But seeing this sort of just different people at different, you know, scales of their life.
And this particular story that I just read, I think one of the things I appreciated about it is that there's, in a sense, nothing overpoweringly dramatic about what he says. It's not based on any kind of dramatic experience or anything even that's particularly unique to this person, but just the fact that he expresses something that so many of us, in fact, experience and feel, but maybe have never really stopped to think about. It's a tremendously powerful story, and how wonderful that he had this opportunity to share it.
Yeah, that's what I love about this, is that's why I share all types of stories, you know, and that's why I encourage people to just be honest on the page. I tell them, you know, you don't have to have this dramatic, carved out, you know, beginning, middle, and end story. I think we're all fascinated about each other, generally, as humans. And I think when you see somebody else opening up and just sort of giving some of that raw honesty, I think that really resonates with people. It creates this sort of like emotional resonance that really, I think, can be helpful for people, both for the writer and the reader.
Once in a while, there are stories which are accompanied by artwork. And one of the most striking is actually a very, very brief story, and yet it takes a full spread, 2 pages of the book to contain. Just from that description, do you know the story I'm talking about?
Yeah, I believe it's the onion one.
Yes. You want to tell our listeners about this?
Yeah, so some of these stories are incredibly short. I'm trying to actually flip to it in the book so I could find the exact words here.
I have it otherwise if you don't find it. It's towards the very beginning.
Yeah, so I remember this, the girl that wrote it. I was actually finishing up and wrapping up for the day and just about completely packed up. And she ran up and asked what I was doing, and I explained it real quick. And she asked if she could quickly do a story, and I said, of course. And it took a while for her to do that. It's really beautiful. So it's got a short little half a paragraph story towards the top, and then the rest of the page is filled with these intricate, curvy little lines, which I believe are almost completely continuous. I don't think she picked up the pen. But just a really visually striking story. And ended up, you know, sitting sort of for an extra hour or so while she did that. But I was very happy once I got it because it's one of my favorite stories. Hmm.
I really think about this quite a lot. So she writes, I always cry when I chop onions. My mom and I left my dad when I was 8. When I asked my dad how much he loved me, he would always say, as much as all the onions in the world, past, present, and future. I always cry when I chop onions.
Yeah, it's a great one.
That's a lot. There's a lot packed into that. One of the things I find striking is how some of these stories are sometimes, in a sense, very raw and clearly written by somebody who has never probably done this before. We get a sense from the way they use language and maybe even to some extent their penmanship that this is someone for whom this is a really foreign or alien kind of experience. And yet sometimes those stories, for all that they lack in elegance, are tremendously compelling. One of my favorites, from almost exactly in the middle of the book, starts up at the top, 5:45 p.m., 88 degrees, sunrise 5:25 a.m., sunset 8:32 p.m., 6/28/12, the date. And then, been a good work week, not too hot, little bit breezy, almost 11 months sober, kid on the way. New apartment with a backyard in the blankety-blank city. A backyard, blankety-blank, amazing. Been looking at strollers, and they are a lot more expensive than I anticipated, but that's okay. If it cost every cent that I earned, this kid's gonna have the world. If I can instill some wisdom before I go, it is this. Try and have compassion for the life you and all those around you live. I really love the way in which that story, in a sense, starts to take shape. And in a sense, it begins very unpromisingly. as though this person, as they first begin writing, doesn't really know exactly what to say or doesn't really know the first thing about spinning a story, so to speak. And yet it ends up being very, very special. I think one of the most memorable stories in the book.
So, yeah, everybody gets about one sheet of paper. And I see that often where, you know, just as you described, where they start off and you're not really sure if it has much direction. And then by the end of the story, they end up trying to give this really profound advice for people, and it usually ends up being very profound. I think that that's part of going back to what we were talking about before with the spontaneity. Choosing to just, like, do it right in that moment forces them to go on this little journey and to sort of craft it as they're going. And there's a rawness about that that I think really is wonderful.
Hmm. It brings to mind something that... a couple of different things that I heard you say in an interview that was done with you, I believe, on PBS. At some point you've said, I wanted to create a physical and mobile space to give people the opportunity to be curious about their lives and the lives of others. I think that's such an interesting idea. And I think both of those things are important. I'd like you to just say a word about being curious about the lives of other people, but also this notion of being, in a sense, curious about your own life. I think that's a notion we don't hear very often.
Yeah, so that's a big part of why it's all face-to-face is, you know, people will come up and they'll say that they don't have anything worth sharing. And if I can help them be curious, and I do that by every time I'm out collecting, I have either, if it's a smaller day, I'll just have binders of stories for them to read through, you know, that other people have shared. Or what I've been doing now is actually setting up these outdoor exhibits where I hang up about, you know, anywhere between 100 and 200 stories up on these clotheslines and these stands. And so crowds of people come up and read them. And I think once people are curious, they start realizing, oh, maybe I do have something worth sharing. You know, they see stories like the one you just read where it doesn't have, you know, they're not these like crafted little pieces of, you know, a memoir. It's just being honest and just sharing something. And that's the kind of people we're curious about, too, is, you know, just the people that we share our world with every day.
Absolutely. At another point, I think this might be on your website, you said the project is about creating pathways and architecture for people to open up organically without being prompted or feeling any requirement or responsibilities of what they are supposed to share. I'm especially interested in that first thing you're saying. It's about creating pathways and architecture. Why do you phrase it that way? I'm very intrigued.
So that is all about the space I've created. So, you know, it's changed and evolved over time, but when I'm out there, I have a sign and it's handmade, so it doesn't look like something, you know, printed and brought out and like a business trying to do something. It's a handmade sign inviting people to come up and be curious. At first, they don't have to do anything. It's not like they come up and I hand them a clipboard right away. They come up and they get to ask what I'm doing. They can either start writing immediately after that. We can chat for a bit. They could read stories. But I found that having this opt-in space, the space where they can come up and just kind of ask questions and be curious about it, a lot of people participate that might not otherwise choose to. You know, if I just had something that where I wasn't there and it was just a bunch of paper and it said, like, come up and write something and then put it in this slot, I don't think as many people would participate. But there's been a lot of really conscious decisions on how to create something that would make people feel both engaged and have a safe place to share stuff. Hmm.
I really appreciate it, too. This is, I know, in the PBS interview that I think was on the PBS NewsHour, that you commented on the fact that we live in a world in which technology, on the one hand, allows us to very freely share about you know, all the minutiae in our lives to whatever extent. And if we choose, we can share kind of hot and heavy stories as well. But nevertheless, in such a world, you said that you think a lot of people still feel a deficit in feeling emotionally heard sometimes, which suggests that there are different degrees to which we might feel heard by other people, and that maybe we don't always feel like we're being heard on the most profound kind of level.
Yeah, so this definitely isn't a competition to any kind of, you know, modern sharing. I think it's a really complex sort of thing that's happening, and I think it's really great. Like, the more ways for us to share bits about our lives, the better. But this is, I think, touching on something that we don't get online as often, and that's, you know, in the book and on the website, I share all the actual handwriting. That's a big part of it for me, because there's just so much personality in the, you know, the way that they write these, and it's almost like little portraits. And I think when you put pen to paper like that, it helps you slow down a little bit and reflect more on, you know, what you're sharing. And yeah, so I think it's just, it's different, you know, it's not a better or worse, but just a sort of different way to share.
Hmm. I do appreciate the fact that the book serves up these stories in the original handwriting of those who wrote the stories. But it's also an experience that most of us don't have. And in a sense, when you first open up the book, it's a little bit of a shock to be confronted by that. And in a sense, it requires a little bit of, at least at first, a little bit of persistence on the part of the reader to kind of make our way through that versus just the clean, pristine font of some printed page that we typically have in a book. Is that your experience too, as you actually read the originals and the thousands of stories?
Southeast and South Central Wisconsin Emergency Alert System. In the event of an emergency, this system would bring you important information. This test is now concluded.
Is relatively brief, but really powerful. I just spent 3 months in an eating disorder facility. I just finished my first 3 weeks of college. I'm slipping back. I'm not doing what I'm supposed to do. I lie about it. But I feel good. I am happy, like really happy, and the word is big and stretches across the page. I know what I'm doing, but I don't know how long this is going to last. I don't want to go back, and I'm scared. I really appreciate this story because, in a sense, it serves up the complexity that is so often a part of life, and that especially when we're confronting something that is complicated, life is not tidy at all.
Yeah, and I think people really get a chance to, you know, this is something that she was probably carrying with her, and there's something really special about being able to take some of that weight off of your own shoulders and to turn it into something that other people will find value in. You know, so it turns something that, you know, one of her, an anxiety she has about going through this phase of her life again. And now other people will hopefully read that and, you know, maybe have a shared experience where they don't feel so alone, or just gain awareness of a life that they didn't know about before. And, you know, just helps us see the world through other people's eyes.
I did want to make sure that we reiterate the fact that that this is not just a book about failed suicide attempts and domestic abuse or clinical depression. There are also some really funny stories here. One of them that I remember is of, here it is. My mom found my pot cookies and ate one. I was at work and I got a text saying, I found these cookies in the back of your closet. Can I have one? Asking as if finding a plate of cookies underneath a pile of sweaters was totally normal. Anyways, she didn't even wait for my response, and she ate one. I came home after work, and she was hysterically laughing at Armageddon with my dad shaking his head while seated in his chair. I did eventually find out she took more cookies for herself later. cool, Mom.
I love that one.
That's great. Can you just tell us about how often there are funny stories and what you think? I mean, I think we can understand why someone would really put down on paper something that's heavy and difficult, and it's cathartic to share such a story. What do you think's going on when people make other choices about the kind of story to share?
I think it's a little bit different for everybody, but, you know, that's a big part of this project for me, is that people can put into it or take out of it whatever they want. So for some people, it's a form of catharsis. For other people, it's a way to, as I just mentioned, to see the world through other people's eyes. So one thing I've learned after interacting with, you know, tens of thousands of people now, is that you can never know what somebody's going to write about when they sit down. They could look like the happiest person in the world and then write one of those really emotionally heavy stories, or they could be really sort of quiet and write some of the funniest ones. And I think on different days they would write different stories. I like to often emphasize that I don't think these stories are representative of, you know, that person's entire life. It's a snapshot. It's like a moment, you know, in their life. And it's just whatever we happen to capture that day. Hmm.
Was it difficult to sell this as a book idea? I mean, in the same way that, you know, it might be difficult to even explain to people what this Strangers Project was about in its infancy. I mean, I think now there are a few people have heard about it, and it starts to make a wonderful sort of sense. But for instance, the folks at HarperCollins, was this a tough sell to have them understand just what would be gathered together and what this book would look like?
Well, I was really fortunate to have a really great group of people following along online and reading the stories every day and engaging with the stories. And I think that this project, as a very visual one, when you can see it, it sort of clicks. It's certainly, and like you just said, hard to describe sometimes to somebody that hasn't seen it. But I see this when I'm out collecting, where people will come up and they'll be a little bit curious but hesitant. But as soon as they can flip through and see the kind of things that other people wrote, something snaps and they're like, oh, this is actually really great. And I think that made it a good sell for us. It's a very visual book, so it's all the original handwriting, like we said, and I think that lends itself really well to the print format, because these pages look just like the pages that people hand me. You know, they're just the black pen and white paper, and it feels very much like you're holding an original part of the project. Hmm.
I assume, well, I know for a fact that the Strangers Project is still going on, because for one thing, there's a website, strangersproject.com, in which we can see more of these stories as they continue to come in. Is the Strangers Project still, in a sense, a simple one-man project, or do you have people who are with you helping in the gathering of these stories?
It's pretty much just me. I am starting to bring in, I have a lot of really dedicated fans that are sending me emails, and they say, you know, I'd love to do this, and I'd love to either do it with you or to set up my own station, and that's something I'm probably going to explore a little bit more later this summer, but yeah, I've been starting to have people come out and help, because it's growing in scale, too. So as of right now, it's mostly just me. But as I set up these outdoor exhibits, more and more people are coming up, to the point where at any given time, about 50 people will be reading stories, part of the plus of having the high volume of traffic here in New York. I'd love to bring in some other people, because that's the experience of actually collecting these stories is a really wonderful one that I haven't been able to share as often, you know, on the website. I've been able to share the stories, but not as much of, you know, my own experience collecting them.
So you keep them all? How do you keep them?
So I have a very large storage shelf filled with stacks and stacks of paper. So they are all right here in my room, so I see them every day.
Are they organized by date or in any other fashion?
No, in the past I had explored a lot of different ways, and earlier versions of the website, for instance, I tried more metadata, so I would keep the date and the location, because I've collected in several cities around the country now, and I shared that on the website, and I thought it was really interesting, but I didn't see many people using those features. I saw people just kind of interested in the stories themselves. So now I have my own system, but I don't know how I could describe it. It's pretty much separate piles. It's very subjective. You know, I put them in piles based on if I think I'll use it in an exhibit or if I'll share it online or if it's going to end up in one of the books. Really just different piles with no set criteria.
Right. And you've just touched on the fact that I wanted to make sure we took a second to say that once in a while, at least, some of these stories go on public display in exhibitions, almost like art exhibits. How often does that happen, and what kind of experience is that?
So I just started doing those last year, and they've become one of my favorite parts of the project. So what I do is I hang up stories inside these gallery spaces. I've done three of them at this wonderful place called Fountain Gallery here in New York City, and we're usually able to hang up about 900 stories. So it's just a wall completely covered with string and clothespins and all the original stories hung right up on the wall. And so people come in and can just sort of be surrounded and immersed by these stories. And something I really also enjoy about it is that people are sharing stories in these spaces too, just like when I'm out collecting. So it's not people just coming in and consuming the work. They're also adding to it right in that moment.
Hmm. Is this how you pay the mortgage, or do you have a day job and this is just a labor of love in the off hours of your life, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, it started as a passion project. So the first several years I worked outside of this, both doing a very traditional job doing web design and whatnot, and then also working with Active Minds. Now, though, the past year or so, I'm doing this full time. And it's great because I'm able to continue growing the project now that I'm doing it full-time in ways that I've always wanted to, such as doing these exhibits.
Mm. So you write for grants and so on? I mean, is this a nonprofit enterprise or?
No, I fund this all through things like the book and through speaking engagements and the exhibits and things like that.
Mm. Well, it is a wonderful undertaking. Do you see any end to it, or do you foresee yourself being immersed in the Strangers Project for a long, long time to come?
I don't think I'll ever stop doing it entirely. I do want to launch some new projects in the coming year. But the great thing about the Strangers Project is that it can work on any scale. So, you know, when I started this, it was outside of a little coffee shop with a little tiny sign and just whenever I had free time. So I can't imagine ever completely stopping to do it. I think it's always going to exist in some capacity. And certainly for the next 2 years, I'm planning on growing it.
Hmm. Well, the book is a terrific introduction to this wonderful project, The Strangers Project. The book is What's Your Story? True Experiences from Complete Strangers. 200 of the stories gathered together in The Strangers Project. The book is published by Harper Design, an imprint of HarperCollins. And the book does include a few photographs as well, but mostly it is just these stories reproduced very, very faithfully. And, of course, for more on this, you can also go to the website Strangers Project. Brandon Doman, thank you so much for creating such a wonderful experience for so many people who have either shared their stories or read the stories of others. And I wish you very, very well with the Strangers Project.
Thank you so much. It was wonderful talking with you.
Tomorrow's morning show will include a conversation with one of the best-selling authors in the world, Mary Higgins Clark. Support for the morning show comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. WGTD is also supported by Carthage College, dedicated to combining an environment of reflection and self-discovery with a culture of high expectation, designed to allow students to uncover and ignite their potential. More information about undergraduate and adult education opportunities at carthage.edu. Partly sunny skies today and mild temperatures, a high of 69 degrees. Clear skies tonight and a low of 50. Sunny tomorrow as well, a high of 71 degrees. Friday, we warm to 76 degrees. Saturday, the 4th of July, under sunny skies again, we'll warm to 79 degrees. 82 degrees for the high temperature on Sunday. Our first significant chance of rain is on Monday. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha.